Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Over to Jokic, a pass to no one in particular, another Denver turnover. LeBron James has it with 6:40 to go, feeds Kuzma on the drive, kicks it a low pass, received by Caruso, finds the cutting James, layup good, 18-2 Laker run.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Here we go. Two on, two out, 2-2 pitch to Ramirez. Hit in the air, deep right center, angles back. He's out of room. It's out of here. The Indians walk off the White Sox. A stunner here in Cleveland.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Jamal Murray standing inside a half court, palming it with a right hand, runs his man through a Jokic screen. Jamal Murray's going to try a 28-foot three, and he buries that one as well. 28 points, 12 assists, 8 rebounds. Denver 111, Lakers 99 with 53 seconds left.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you. Happy hump day, everybody.
Oh, what is happening?
Well, there's a whole lot happening right now, Andrew.
There is a lot going on, man. A lot going on out there in the world.
But let's talk about giraffes.
Hey, I'm okay with that. We could do that. I did something.
I'm into elephants.
I am into elephants. I did something controversial about 5 minutes ago.
Ooh, I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to if you didn't, and we need to discuss this.
Sure, I'm all for it, man. This is an open book.
Sorry, you only got here 5 minutes ago.
It just happened as I walked in the door. It just happened.
First of all, don't discredit this man. It was 9.5
yeah,
minutes
it was
ago.
9.5 minutes ago. It was a good 11:50 when I rolled in.
Okay, before you tell the fine folks of Portland.
Okay.
Or all over the world.
All over. Yeah, we got listeners in like Abu Dhabi. We're all over the place, man.
Finland and Norway.
Yeah. Dude, I went to Vietnam. I totally pubbed the show over there. I told them how they could download the app and listen.
You pass out some radio.com stickers.
They always ended up pointing a different direction, so I don't think they understood what I was saying.
Oh, my God. Just download the app. That's how you do it. You can listen from anywhere.
But let me just make this abundantly clear.
Mm-hmm.
I am far and away the biggest germaphobe of this group.
You are, yes.
So I am the weird one in this conversation. Yeah. And let me get out in front. What you did, I will never do. I'm a big, I'm conscious about how much food I waste or don't waste. It's a big thing for me. I hate wasting a lot of food.
Yes.
In this particular instance, going straight to the trash can and I'm not second guessing it. I'll allow the floor for you.
I almost did that mainly because of the shame that I could sense coming from the other side of the room. I could sense it immediately that you were questioning me. You were judging me. I could feel it. I could feel your eyeballs on me, and I almost didn't make this decision.
Does this invoke a five-second rule?
So the wife has been craving Subway lately. And
why?
That's a good question. I don't know, but she just has been on this, like, we need to go to Subway. I want Subway. I've had Subway
in
a long time.
She's a fan of the Watts all of a sudden?
She's a big Subway guy, you know? Like, all right, here we go. So last night, I was doing yard work. She was doing some stuff. Neither of us wanted to cook, so we thought we'll go to Subway, we'll get dinner. But usually my next day lunch is leftovers, and so since we didn't cook, we were at Subway, and I doubled up. I was like, boom, I'm gonna get a sandwich for dinner, I'm gonna get a sandwich for lunch tomorrow.
Take advantage of that foot-long special.
Why not? She was buying too. It was supposed to be her dinner night.
It starts. So I
got 2 foot-longs. Who doesn't like 2 foot-longs in their life? So I had one for dinner last night. This morning I work out, come home, doing some stuff around the house. I didn't have time to eat before I left, so I'm starving. I walk into the studio, I pull my sandwich out of my backpack, and it's a foot long, gotta have the foot long, And as I'm like turning it to set it down onto the table, somehow Subway didn't close one end of the bag there. And 6 of the inches just went flying.
Half the sandwich drops on
half
the ground.
Half the sandwich immediately, boom, on the ground. And you
half a second and 6 inches is all that they need shot off.
Right. The bag, that's all the bag needed was a half a second and 6 inches. You immediately judge me and you say, the first words out of Sprague's mouth is, you're not going to eat that, are you? And before you could even get that line out of your mouth, I had bent over, picked it up, and taken a little gander at it. And
now, hold on.
And then it continued to you searching how many germs can land on food in 5 seconds. And breaking news, I ate the 6 inches. Don't pull that.
You definitely have to pull that, I think. Now, for the record, I did. That was my first thing. You're not going to eat that, are you?
That was the first thing out of your mouth.
I think I deserve a little credit as a germaphobe to instantly realize that you do not feel the same way about me in these instances. And I went, well, I think if it's, are you a believer in 3 or 5 second rule? Like, I instantly backpedaled because I'm like, I don't want to make him feel bad about
this.
Did it go
all the way onto the floor or just onto the chair?
No,
or
it's on the floor. It went on the floor.
It was on the floor.
Where Cam sits, where Sukanik sits, shoes just tapping all over that floor. There might have been Corona on the bottom of those shoes.
I would say that specific floor in that studio. And
it's not clean. I'm not trying to argue that it was a safe sandwich to eat.
Although it was deep clean like a month ago.
It was.
It was. But that sandwich is lost.
Thank you.
See, now here, I agree with you guys.
Now, I normally will invoke the 5 second rule.
Hey, grab it, dust it off.
Especially at home. But that particular floor in there. Nope, that sandwich is gone. Sorry.
So I have a sliding scale of what am I willing to put up with in terms of nastiness and germs, and then the graph then connects with how hungry am I?
Yes.
And if I was on the side of the graph that said, or the chart, whatever you want to call it, that I was not that hungry, like this is just it's my lunch, whatever. If I eat it, I eat it. Mm-hmm. I was on the far end of that scale of like starving, and I was questioning if 6 inches was going to be enough for me for the afternoon. And in my head, I made the decision that I don't think it is. I need the whole foot. And
we're pulling those.
It's a whole
I pulled the trigger.
Thing I'm going to be here a little late this afternoon.
I would like to say that I dug out some of like the side veggies that it felt like it hit the floor. Okay. I dug some of those out. I dusted the top of the bread off.
Okay, so the veggies go because they touch the floor. The top of the bun touches the floor and you just dust it off?
You wipe it, you know? You just kind of give it a little...
This is disgusting. This is grossing me out, and I haven't eaten my lunch yet, and we have listeners that I'm sure are eating lunch right now. They're like, oh, God, you dropped it in a studio floor.
I did.
Yesterday, by the way, Sukanik's opening his show talking about where to take a dump, and he's got a toilet behind him.
He did. He's got a bidet in here.
And your sandwich is just dropping right there.
Oh, come on. The bidet was in the box. We're good.
I put a poll question on this. I do want to know, where do people apply this rule in their lives? Do they go 3 seconds? Do they go 5, or do they go Sprague, never, none, throw it away, it's done, it's over?
Again, it depends on how hungry I am.
Well, I mean, look, if I'm starving, I'll eat it, right? But luckily, I'm not in that position, can pick or choose, I'm choosing to pick that sandwich up and throw it away.
You're not going
to
pull a Costanza and take a donut off the top of the garbage? It wasn't touching anything, man. It was on top of a plate. Come on. There was no contact there.
My daughter tried to do that the other day, and we had to lecture her.
Did she try to take food out of the garbage?
Yes. Yeah.
What is she, a dog?
She goes, well, it was on the top, and it was like, and I'm like, you never do that. Never. She's 4. She's learning, but I was pretty sad as a parent to go, my 4-year-old thinks this is the way of life, to pick food out of a garbage when we have plenty of food in a pantry and a fridge.
That'll save you some money in the long run if she does it on a regular basis. God. No leftovers. Come on, you don't want to waste food.
You know, my thought, I don't know what the process is there, the difference between you and me. I've had traumatic food experiences in my life, so maybe that always plays a factor in the back of my mind, but...
His nickname is Dirt. Come on.
Yeah, there's not a high threshold there.
That's a good point.
You know,
okay, that's a fair point.
Not a big bar across.
Yeah. I've also been called the soy boy of the show, so.
You order medium pizzas, so okay. What?
Stop.
You got like an alfalfa comb over going on over there, too. It's a whole look,
stop
man.
It.
You got to thank what's going on up top,
man. I the headphones, man. It's okay. The headphones. Oh. They just take the hair out.
Oh, sure.
Everywhere.
Yeah, sure.
Where's Darla?
It's all gelled all over to the side.
It's not even gel. It's water.
It's just water.
It's water.
Oh,
I took a late shower.
Holds pretty firm.
It does.
Look at you.
Yeah, I don't know where that stems from. Maybe it's way of life. Maybe it's parenting. But my kids, because my wife is like you. My wife I don't even know if she has a 5 second rule. I think if it's down for 15 seconds, she'll pick that bad boy up.
Yeah, grab it, need it.
And my kids are kind of the same way. I almost always have to turn the other cheek and go, nope, not going to say anything.
I just like that there's actually a few people that are defending me on the fan text line. Not a lot, but there are a few.
There's a lot of you out there. In fact, I would say there's more of you than there is me in this particular issue.
You know what I am when it comes to this kind of stuff? I'm Bill Belichick at a presser. Everybody's going to make fun of me for wearing a sweatshirt that's got holes in it. Looks like it's from the 1980s or some sort of
Seattle.
Dude, I don't care, man. Make fun of me all you want. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I got an iron skillet stomach. It hasn't caused me any damage yet.
See, I'm not worried about the stomach thing because I think I got
what
a strong
stomach. What are you worried about then? Come on. A little bacteria being on your food.
It's the same thing with flies. If I see a fly in my house, I will not stop till that fly is dead.
Let me ask you this. You got a brick of cheese in the fridge.
Yeah.
You got mold on one side of the cheese. Are you throwing the whole brick out or are you cutting around the mold?
No, you cut a decent amount, but you cut the mold off.
Cut
you keep the rest.
Off.
What's the difference? There's mold on that cheese.
Not the back end.
How do you know it didn't seep into the rest of the cheese?
Because when you cut it, you don't see
You got mold traits in there. It just hasn't shown up yet.
I mean, there's probably a thing to that. Like the particles in the air or something, the mold. The mold air is now covered in all the cheese.
Somebody said, eat that sandwich. Life's too short to live over fear of 6 inches. That it is, man. That it is.
The 6-inch sandwich, by the way, is the medium pizza of the sandwich family, right?
Yeah, who goes to sub? I mean,
you don't get a 6-inch.
No. You get a foot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's half a sandwich.
Yes.
Yeah. Medium pizza's half a pizza.
What, you like make a turkey sandwich at home? You just cut it in half and eat half? Who does that?
I never cut my sandwiches at home.
I like to sometimes.
That's because you're a child.
I am, yeah.
All right, well, we got a good show today.
We've come full circle here.
We have come full circle. Yeah. It's a good show today. Brandon Huffman is going to join us. He's a national recruiting expert. He is going to join us at 1:30 today. I want to ask him, what has been the impact the Pac-12 has felt from recruiting being the last conference of the Power Five to announce their return to college football, right? That's the big doom and gloom, is that we're going to fall way behind. I want to ask a national recruiting expert, is this true? Are you actually seeing this on the recruiting trail? Stat or story to get to. We've got Kyle Bonagura of ESPN. He covers the Pac-12. He's going to join us for the Daily Ticker. So we'll get an idea of what he thinks is going to be announced tomorrow for the Pac-12, although maybe not good news given another cancellation / postponement in college football today and another program having to stop. So we'll talk to Kyle Bonagura at 12:30. I would start with the Western Conference Finals, but I'm not going to.
Oh. Okay.
I'm going to get to that at 1. Oh. We got a good show today.
We do. There's a lot to get to.
I actually want to start in the NFL. This is a wild story and a pretty big deal. A team doctor punctured the lung of Tyrod Taylor. What the hell's going on in L.A.? We'll start there. Dirt and Sprague with you on 1080 The Fan. R.I.P. to Gale Sayers.
Yeah, saw that today.
Well before my time, but the Kansas Comet passed today at 77. Brian Song, one of the more influential football movies of all time.
We will pay homage to Gale Sayers in Stat Story today.
Great.
Oh, I like that.
That's good to know.
I'm not going to be able to answer any of those, but I hope I learned something about him.
I read some stuff on him today, and admittedly, I didn't know a ton outside of the name, the movie, the significance of his time when he played. But sad news to hear for the NFL, one of the more recognizable names of all time. This story leaked out. Now, normally, I would start with the Western Conference Finals. We'll get to that at 1 o'clock today. But this story came out later, about a couple hours ago, and I had to do a double take.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't real life, right? Well, it's 2020, so sure. Adam Schefter did the report, details on the Chargers team doctor. So Tyrod Taylor was out. Remember, he had a breathing problem just before the game. He was on the sidelines. Herbert got the start. He ended up going to the hospital. He's really having trouble breathing. Turns out he's had a rib injury. And they wanted to give him some painkillers to allow him to play, to which somebody on Twitter had a great point. I love the NFL. Instead of just healing the ribs naturally, let's put an injection in to numb your body so you can be tackled by 300-pound men.
So if you get a helmet to the chest, you won't feel it.
But Tyrod Taylor had that injury. They were very vague. There were no details to it. Well, the details have come out. The Chargers team doctor accidentally punctured the lung of Tyrod Taylor while trying to give him a pain-killing injection to the quarterback's cracked ribs. That's why he had trouble breathing and why he had to go to the hospital. It's also why he's probably not starting, which I'm glad I switched my answer again yesterday.
Yes, I'm going to miss that NFL true or false.
And it's going to be Justin Herbert. But a wild story where a team doctor somehow accidentally punctures the lung of the starting quarterback. Good God.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if I've ever heard of this happening in the NFL. And you think of how many injections these guys probably get on a year-by-year basis. It's like every week, probably countless guys on the roster that are getting some form of a pain relief injection somewhere in their body. So the fact that I've never heard this tells you how rare it is. His, I believe his agent came out and tweeted like they're having an investigation take place. They've contacted a medical and legal team. They're in touch with Tyrod. So the Players Association is on top of this. Like, they're looking into this to see if anything can happen. Now, I did see a former NFL player. The name escapes me, but I saw him tweet earlier saying that if you're a player, the second you give the thumbs up for something to be done to you, which I'm sure Tyrod did in this case, sure, saying, yeah, I want the injection because I want to be able to play today, that you waive the ability to file any kind of lawsuit. I believe I read that today. So we might have to follow up on that note. But this is wild. You hope that he's going to be okay, but clearly an issue that is lingering because now everybody's saying that Herbert's going to start for another week. I can't imagine having a punctured lung is good for getting back on the football field in the short term.
Yeah, Ryan Harris says, little known fact, per the CBA, when player accepts team medical care, they cannot sue.
Yeah, that was the way.
Many people had heard that report this morning from Schefter and kind of ran with the, oh, that's why Anthony Lynn is so stuck on keeping Tyrod Taylor the starting quarterback, so we can keep him happy so he doesn't sue.
It does make a little more sense, though, I will say that.
Well, I don't think it's relevant if it's in the CBA. If he can't sue because he okayed the treatment, then I don't think there's relevance.
I'm just saying,
there.
I think if you're a head coach, that's a pretty tough way for your starter to lose a job. The team doctor puncturing his lung, and now he's not going to start anymore. So that's a rough way to go out.
Can I ask the question why this doctor, why it's not been announced he's been fired?
It's a good question, Bob.
I don't know. The Players Association, I'm sure there's a mechanism, you know, if they can demonstrate malpractice, then I don't know if that supersedes whatever the standard agreement
It's not even so much to me the player, like the Players Association for all that and the CBA and whatnot. Those are important elements to it, but I'm more looking at this just from a team standpoint. Yeah. If I'm the owner of the Chargers today and this story came out or I knew about this, I'm immediately taking action because, oh, by the way, I have a young quarterback that's probably going to start for me most likely the rest of the year, and if not starting next year.
Right.
How many players are going to refuse treatment moving forward?
Yeah, get second and third opinions because screw this guy.
Look at that guy with his side eye. Like, I don't think so, buddy. Get that needle away from me.
You don't even know how to administer a proper pain-killing injection. You hit my lung?
I'm not glad that this happened to him. I'm glad we got an answer because that will go down as one of the stranger stories that I've seen in quite some time. And we all had the same reaction on Sunday when we're watching, whether it was just that game individually or the red zone. They're like, hey, Herbert's starting, and nobody saw it coming. There was no tweet. There was no like, hey, Herbert's going to get the nod today. And then they randomly come out and say Tyrod Taylor suffered a chest injury pregame. And nobody knew how to answer that. How does a quarterback suffer a chest injury pregame? It doesn't make any damn sense. Like, what's going on? Like, a sumo wrestler sit on him in the locker room? Like, what the hell's happening here? So at least we have an answer now of what took place.
I also give Tyrod Taylor a lot of credit. Anthony Lynn had to talk to the media after the story. He says they just made a mistake. And then he says it happens. Tyrod's not angry, not upset. The NFLPA Assistant Executive Director of External Affairs, George Atala, says our medical and legal team have been in touch with Tyrod and his agents since Sunday collecting facts. An investigation has been initiated. I'd be pissed. I don't know how he's not mad. Like, I get mistakes happen in life. There's no doubt.
For sure.
There are certain industries and certain jobs, though, where the extensive training would take us to a place where you'd assume this was not possible. A doctor knows where to not put it so it doesn't touch your lung and give you trouble breathing. Because, oh, by the way,
you can't puncture a lung, man.
You need to breathe to be able to live.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd be pretty livid, especially considering we don't know how long this is going to keep him out. So now we obviously missed the game on Sunday against the Chiefs. Now things are leaning towards him. It looks like not playing on Sunday against the Panthers. Does it leak into another week after that? Like, how long does this thing carry on? And look, Anthony Lynn can come out and be as supportive of Tyrod Taylor as he wants. The locker room loves him. I get it. He's a beloved guy in the NFL, and the teammates around him really enjoy playing with him, and I'm sure they're fine with him being their starter. There's a looming issue here, though, if Herbert plays well again. Like, you're going to get to the point where you lose a locker room. Let's say Tyrod Taylor ends up missing three games, man, and Herbert comes out this week and plays really well and leads you to a victory and shows what he showed you last week. What if he leads you to another one after that?
And then three and one.
Right? And then Tyrod Taylor's healthy. What are you going to do?
Right.
You got a rookie quarterback who lights it up three straight weeks and you're going to sit him down? Like, that's another looming issue that they got to worry about. I think they would probably prefer Herbert struggle a little bit this weekend so it's not a controversial decision to put Tyrod Taylor back in the lineup.
No chance.
You're gonna, like, I think there's a locker room thing brewing of one. First, the team doctor, can we trust him? Because he's puncturing lungs of teammates, so that's not a great thing. And you don't want to lose confidence in that. And then a locker room wants to rally around a quarterback. And I think they did Tyrod Taylor in the preseason. Some of the stuff he was doing on social justice, like, you just got that sense on Hard Knocks. And then you saw it last Sunday after the close loss to the Chiefs, where a lot of guys came out and publicly supported Herbert. They want to rally around one guy, and it's just going to be weird if you end up having to flip back and forth, because who knows how long this keeps him out of the lineup.
Well, remember the Hugh Jackson Baker Mayfield thing. Same quarterback, by the way, Tyrod Taylor, the starter.
Yeah, he got hurt.
Hugh made this clear too. He said, well, Baker's not ready. When Baker's ready, I'll throw Baker out there. And then Baker had to go out because of an injury.
Yeah, Thursday Night Football.
And he played so well that Hugh Jackson got put into a corner. He couldn't do anything. It was like, well, yeah, Baker's our guy. I think Tyrod missed a week or two and Baker took the reins and he set the rookie touchdown record. He can say Tyrod 100% healthy is our quarterback. If they start 3-1, if Justin Herbert's to play this weekend, which it sounds like he will, and wins, and then let's just for argument's sake say he has to start one more week, you can't tell me at 3-1 you're taking a rookie quarterback out.
I wouldn't think so.
Especially if he doesn't lose you the game or he plays well.
Right. That game after Carolina, by the way, is at Tampa. So you find a way to beat Tom Brady with Justin Herbert in the lineup.
Why can't they be? Carolina hung with Tampa all weekend last
Sunday. That pass rush can make life miserable for Tom Brady with what they got up front.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's just, and I'll be curious. I don't know. I'll be curious to hear what Suk has to say about this later. I don't ever recognize these headlines. Like, do you guys know of any this happening and it being publicized? I can't ever remember seeing something like this.
So I'm sure it's been done somewhere.
I'm sure it happens behind the scenes from time to time, and maybe if it's not a quarterback, it's not publicized, and you just kind of go about your business. But I'd be curious from the internal workings of, does this happen?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know specifically about a shot to the lungs or whatnot. I will say this has happened. This happened rampantly in the NFL, which is why they face lawsuits. They got guys addicted to pain medicine.
Oh, yeah.
And some of those guys ended up committing suicide and citing the NFL to blame, which led to that lawsuit. So the team doctors in the NFL are not maybe the almost the reliable individuals you'd think they are. I can't speak to this one person. I can't speak to all the team doctors at all. This is just an unfortunate incident, and you kind of just do a second glance of, how the hell does that even happen?
It was very, very chargery, is it not?
Well, does it worry you, Herbert? I almost tweeted this. Quite literally yesterday, somebody texted, Herbert's in the right place.
Yeah,
picked by the right team, and I think, wow.
It's the Chargers.
Now they're very chargery.
It's the Chargers.
Hey, what's the latest with the Pac-12? The announcement is set for tomorrow. They're going to have a big meeting and decide ultimately what they want to do. Kyle Bonagura covers the conference for ESPN. He'll give us his thoughts on what to expect tomorrow. Kyle Bonagura joins us for the Daily Ticker next on Radio.com and 1080 The Fan.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, well, big news expected from the Pac-12 tomorrow. They said last week they were going to talk on Thursday and come to a conclusion on whether or not they are going to come back for fall football. Many are speculating that they will. But Kyle Bonagura, one of our favorites, covers the conference with ESPN on Twitter, at Bonagura ESPN. Give him a follow. He joins us now here on the Daily Ticker. Kyle, good to have you back on with us here in Portland, my man. Thank you for coming on. Just, I'll start with the obvious. What does your gut say, or what is your reporting? What do you think is going to ultimately be announced tomorrow once their phone call, their Zoom meeting, whatever it is, concludes?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing is that they're going to announce that football will be back this fall. And I think the question really at this point isn't about, you know, if that's going to happen. It's about when the schedule is going to start. And for that, I really don't have a good sense of what it's going to be. I think there's two clear options here based on reporting that I've done, and you know, others have as well, is that October 31st and November 7th are both in play. I think it's certainly possible that everyone starts on either day. I think it's possible that there's a hybrid between the two, where some schools are ready to go on the earlier date, while others decide or told to be ready for November 7th, right? I think for that to be determined one way or the other, it's really going to take some discussion in the room tomorrow, or I guess it's not really a room, on the Zoom meeting tomorrow, very 2020, to really kind of figure out where everyone is at and make sure they're on the same page.
Well, it's funny we spent so much time wondering how it affects the playoff, considering the Pac-12 hasn't been in the playoff now in a number of years, but I'm going to ask it anyways. How does this affect the playoff if they end up, I mean, that would give you either a 7-game season or a 6-game season, depending on if you start Halloween or the week after, or maybe some, you know, play 6 and some play 7. Just how does that play into the playoff in your mind when other conferences, at least as of now, are slated and scheduled to play more games than that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't really think anyone has a definitive answer yet. The College Football Playoff has maintained for weeks that it's not going to release any defined criteria for eligibility for the playoff until they have to, and they haven't gotten to that point yet. Without knowing how many games the Pac-12 is going to play, without knowing when other conferences are going to end, I still think there's a lot of variables out there that are to be determined. Because I mean, at the rate that we're seeing postponements and cancellations in other conferences, I think it's really premature to say that the playoff is going to actually take place on the date that it's currently slated for, right? Because if you start seeing several teams in various conferences across the country with multiple postponements for the next, you know, for the foreseeable future, following the trend that we've seen, you know, these conferences, the other conferences, the ones that have already started, there's a good chance that they're not going to be able to, you know, wrap up their schedule when they had hoped to, right? And so the hope for the Pac-12 is that, you know, if that continues to be a trend and there continues to be postponements, is that it would allow the Pac-12 to maybe catch up, right? So say they play 7, say they play 8 games, the ending date that might be released tomorrow, or at least, you know, in the next few days, maybe, you know, as other teams get postponed, eventually the ending dates are a little bit more workable than they are right now.
Yeah, so. Kyle Bonagura, our guest here, ESPN College Football, Pac-12 getting ready to potentially, as he's saying, announce the fall return of football season. We don't know how many games. We'll have to wait on that. He says potentially a hybrid for teams that are more ready. Could be Halloween. Other teams get a little extra time November 7th. Let me ask you about the presidents and Larry Scott. It always seems to be probably the conversation about the conference. It's never really much about Oregon or USC or UW. It's mainly like how much we all hate Larry Scott and what's going on in the Pac-12. Do they have good leadership? The presidents on the West Coast versus the presidents and chancellors all throughout the country in these different conferences operate entirely differently. I'm curious if you think the pressure's been kind of brought up a little more than normal with the way that this has all gone down, whether that's from the fan bases, the coaches, the athletic directors, the media, et cetera. Do you feel like this has kind of been an eye-opening experience for those presidents and chancellors within the Pac-12 of kind of taking another look at the way their conference is operating and the way that the leadership is right now with their commissioner, Larry Scott?
Yes, I don't think it's necessarily anything new. You know, they should have been paying attention. They have been paying attention. It's impossible to not to understand how Larry Scott operates. He's been in the job for 10 years. I think that the most important variables in Larry Scott's, you know, will is he long for the job equation is that, you know, his contract ends in 2022. It's a fully guaranteed contract. He's making over $5 million a year. So to get rid of him early was a little bit tougher earlier in the deal, right? But now that you're kind of getting closer to the finish, you're not going to have to eat as much of that contract if you were to relieve him early, or if you, you know, at a minimum kind of wind him down and set someone else up for when his contract is up. The other factors is now that you have, you know, 10 years again of data, you can show that the bet on the Pac-12 network wasn't a good one. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear now based on the distribution annually to the various campuses. They missed that. They're about, you know, I believe the original projections were the campuses were expecting to get about $10 million a year from the Pac-12 network's performance, and it has come nowhere near that. I believe it's around $2.5-3 million. I'd have to double check. It's somewhere in that range. So now that all the grand plan didn't really work Pac-12 network wise, as far as revenue generation is concerned, I think that's more important. right, than the way that things have been handled with the pandemic, because a lot of these decisions with the pandemic is being set by the presidents, right? So they can't necessarily make the decisions and then blame Larry Scott for them. It's really on them for these, for how it's been handled over the last several months. So I think that it's probably only a matter of time before Larry Scott is out and someone else is in. The conference just needs a reset more than anything, right? There's a lot of issues are out of his hands, you know, too. I think it's just to be fair, right? I think the, you know, just the general interest in Pac-12 football on the West Coast is different than it is in other areas of the country. And, you know, certainly not having teams play at the highest level on a consistent basis, being able to keep the conference in the national conversation, that's a big deal as well. But ultimately, he is the man at the top of the org chart and has a lot to be responsible for.
Yeah, I think a reset would be great. Every Pac-12 fan would love that. If they vote tomorrow night and the green light's good, hey, we're going to start either on, you know, Halloween or November 7th, is everybody ready to practice? Because I've seen, like, Oregon, the governor has given the green light. It's happened in the L.A. area. I'm not sure what's going on in the Bay Area. But just what are you hearing about how close everybody is to ramping up? Because I know that's a big deal for the coaches. They want to get a certain number of weeks in. Are we saying green light Thursday, practice starts Monday for everybody? Where are we at on that?
Yeah, most schools are ready to go whenever, right? The ones that probably have the furthest way to go still are Stanford and Cal, just because the local government ordinances are a little bit different than other places. The cohort rule in California is really weird, where you can't practice with more than 12 people, you know, in a given, you know, pod. I think that I've been given reassurances that both Stanford and Cal don't believe that's going to be an issue that prevents them from practicing. They think they'll be able to get some sort of amendment in time to make it doable. And, you know, that's one of the factors that really could shift Stanford and Cal between October 31st and November 7th, right? If you need a few more days just to get your I's dotted and your T's crossed in order to practice correctly, you know, that's something that's still outstanding. I think pretty much everyone else is ready to go. It's going to be interesting to see if they're really physically where they're at physically, right? Because they haven't with this kind of unclear ramp up period. A lot of people, not just at, you know, the California schools, a lot of students, weren't on campus like they would have been otherwise. I mean, not everyone has been even working out at the same level that they would have been in a normal year, with the, you know, the expectation that the season wouldn't begin until January, until, you know, just a couple weeks ago or last week, whenever it was.
Yeah. Kyle Boniger, ESPN, is our guest. College football reporter, does a great job. Covers the Pac-12 as well on Twitter, at Boniger ESPN. Do we have an idea of the coaches who are pissed about this return and the kind of the subtleness of it, and the coaches who are kind of on board and have been more pissed about the other direction of not going and maybe delaying instead of announcing a postponement, delaying a little bit and giving them enough time? Like, do you have an idea of where that falls within the conference with the coaches?
I mean, I have a general sense. Nothing that I would really feel comfortable reporting, because it's, you know, stuff that's kind of on background at this point. But, like, there's really no one that's thrilled with the way everything has been handled. I think everyone's been, I think more so than other places, the Pac-12 coaches have kind of allowed the people who should be making these decisions make them, and haven't weighed in on issues that are kind of outside their realm of expertise, which I think is probably a good approach. But at the same time, the lack of communication from the conference office to the campus level, I think more than anything, that is something that has been a source of frustration, because, you know, if you don't know what your options are, it's hard to prepare or communicate to the players and the players' parents, to be frank as well. I think those sort of things that affect your day-to-day job, it makes it difficult. And so I, again, going back to, you know, conference leadership, I think that's something that, is again, frustrating for the coaches.
Yeah, I know there's no chance in hell this happens, but I'm going to ask it anyways. It feels like if there's any year to experiment with an expanded playoff, it would be this year, because you don't know how many games teams are going to play. You don't know when the seasons are going to be wrapped up, when the conference championships are going to happen. Like, it is an absolute cluster out there. Is there any chance that they get to the end of the year and they say, hey, man, everybody's like 5-2. Nobody played an on-conference slate of anything meaningful. Like, how do we decide a playoff? Let's expand it to 8 teams.
I mean, I would be completely for that. I'm for an expanded playoff, you know, every year. I don't think four is enough. I think there should be automatic bids for the Power Five schools every year, because it just, it's just weird to have a selection of four teams. I mean, I like it better than the old system, but I think it's clearly needs to get to 8. And, you know, you can't rule it out, I guess, because it's 2020 and you can't rule anything out. But that would be a good equalizer, right? Because it would make it a good way to level the playing field with conferences that have schedules that are much different, and you can't trying to set even criteria for teams that you know, there's no realistic way to do that. I mean, automatic bids would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, Kyle, let me get you out here on this one, man. Notre Dame's game postponed. USF has to kind of shut down their program for the time being. Going back to contact tracing and whatnot. Not the greatest of starts for college football for the teams that have decided to give it a go. What's the percentage chance to you that that meeting concludes tomorrow and they announce that they're not going to start in the fall?
I would be completely shocked if that was the case. I think, no, yeah, I would put that in the single digit percentage. I mean, you can't rule it out again, but I do believe that the Pac-12 is full steam ahead with trying to figure out how they're going to play this fall, and anything beyond that isn't really being discussed right now.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Kyle Bonagura, ESPN college football reporter, also covers the Pac-12 as well on Twitter at Bonagura ESPN. Kyle, we always appreciate how gracious you are with your time, so thanks for hopping on with us here in Portland, my man, and I'm sure we'll talk very soon once football season gets going.
Sounds good. Those conversations will be a lot more fun.
Absolutely. There we go. Kyle Bonagura, ESPN, with the latest there. He says a hybrid start is what to expect for teams that are ready, Halloween, for teams that need a couple more days, November 7th, and that he would be stunned if they were to turn the tide and announce not playing in the fall. So Pac-12 fan out there of whatever team, you can breathe a little sigh of relief. You're going to get some Pac-12 football this year. We don't know. 6-7 games. We'll find out on that tomorrow. I want to stay talking about the Pac-12. There's another report out there. This one about sums up what the conference is as a whole. And I'll share that with you next on The Fan. Question for you to think about in the second hour of the show. What's your go-to national pizza chain? Let's assume you do not go local, although big supporters of local.
Absolutely.
You just, you know, it's one of those random Friday or Saturdays, super lazy, you're not moving. You have one of those national chains up the road from your house. What's your preference?
Okay.
Because we got one pro athlete that gives his preference.
Did you watch any of that yesterday?
No, but okay. I saw this audio and we have it.
If for golf people, it was incredible.
You just have to ruin everything.
And nobody knows who it is. I'm just saying. It was an incredible event yesterday.
I heard good things. I want to talk about the Pac-12 a little bit.
The Pac-12.
I read this blurb. Mandel wrote a piece. He did a mailbag. And he was asked a couple things about the Pac-12. And I actually think this about sums it up. I highlighted and screenshot and edited to make sure I read this specific blurb because I said, oh, this is the conference in a nutshell.
Yeah.
He says, meanwhile, there was little to no proactive action by the conference to get the ball rolling on the government clearances they needed between the September 3rd testing news and the Big Ten's announcement last Wednesday. Now, the conference has quickly gone from unified to completely fractured over the October 31st, November 7th start date debate, among other things. And boy, if the Mountain West manages to lap them, goodness. All of this is a long way of saying that, for the first time, I truly don't believe Scott will still be the league's commissioner come 2022. Yeah. It's up to the presidents to decide whether to just ride it out until then or try to negotiate an early exit. So the entire time there was no communication, which is what some coaches had actually... You'd kind of gotten that message a little late, but you had heard, hey, could you fill us in? What's going on? There was no update. And the bright side of this is that Larry Scott, probably not the commissioner. However, the downside, because the Pac-12 has more downsides than upsides right now, probably not till 2022 because the buyout is ludicrous. And, you know, the Wilner story of taking bonuses before firing half the Pac-12 network staff. He's the highest paid commissioner at $5 million a year.
Yeah.
Mandel talked about this a little bit in his mailbag. I thought that summed up the Pac-12 perfectly in 2020.
Yeah, I think Kyle brought up a good point that some of the stuff that happens against the conference is out of Larry Scott's control, and we need to acknowledge that. Everything bad for the Pac-12 is not simply laying at the feet of the commissioner, and it was not his vote to postpone the season. It was the vote of the president, so if we're angry that the Pac-12's not playing yet, that's not Larry Scott's fault. That's the president's fault. I agree with the sentiment, though, from Mandel, and I think the presidents do too. If you want to get a new contract in your job, you need to be able to point to a few tangible things that you've done well over the length of the last contract. Of like, hey, I know it wasn't all sunshine and roses, but we accomplished this, we did that. Look at this deal we got done. What does he have to point to? The Pac-12 network is an epic failure. The TV deal at the time didn't look bad, but then you got lapped by every other conference. The coaches are pissed off at you now because, as we're mentioning, there was no communication back and forth after the testing was done. And that would have been a really easy thing to do of saying, hey, guys, we got this deal in place. It's not you're not going to have the testing until the end of September, but start coming up with a plan. We're thinking about maybe playing end of October, early November. Come up with your game plan. Start working with your student athletes on getting them back on campus. They caught them all blindsided. Like, oh, okay, I guess we're going to start playing again just because the Big Ten's doing it. That's not the way you want to go about your business. So there's not many positives to point to. I wouldn't be shocked to try and be slightly more positive than you that if it gets down to the last year of the deal and you're at the point of having to renegotiate your TV contracts, that they find a way to buy him out and say, you know, see you later. Here's a little severance to send you on your way. And
he needs more money.
He needs more money because he hasn't made enough clearly over the last decade to say we want somebody else to negotiate this new TV deal because they're going to be the new commissioner of the conference. But I agree. I don't think he's going to be around longer than 2022.
You know, and the other part of this too is the president's, right? Like Larry Scott he's paid $5 million to kind of be the scapegoat. Everything bad that happens that's negative, that reflects poorly on the conference, it just shines on him because like Goodell or Silver or anybody else, he's paid and commissioned by the presidents, the people above him. I am wondering at what point the presidents of these universities, the West Coast operates entirely different, we know that. But at what point do the presidents prioritize, not necessarily during COVID, because global pandemics are weird. It's more, when do you think the presidents are actually going to be looking at the athletic department and saying, we need to be doing everything at the top level because that's the front porch to all our universities?
I don't think they ever will.
You don't think they ever will?
I don't. Maybe you might have one or two that are willing to do it, but from a conference-wide angle, I don't think you'll get there
like
on the West
Oregon.
Coast.
You know, Oregon's a good example of this. If Oregon wasn't good in football, how many less students do they have?
Oh,
what's
no
their
doubt
tuition
about it.
Price right now? And, you know, to just maintain that it's all about education for colleges, I mean, how many students need to be interviewed drunk saying, yeah, good Bama, I came here to roll time with Saban. It's not necessarily about school for every student. There's a lot of students that they don't care about sports, and I understand that aspect of it. But, you know, that's part of this equation, too, long term. For all the people that are doom and gloom about the conference and that it'll ever be relevant, you'll ever compete against the SEC, I would argue geography already is against you in that regard. LA and Arizona are your biggest hubs. You can't compete with the South. You just, and those teams don't play non-conference games. They don't travel for non-conference games.
The deck is stacked against you.
The deck is, it's stacked against you. But there are things that these presidents could be doing that I think would benefit the future of the conference. Namely, just identifying what's a bad idea and what's a good idea.
Sure.
They don't really seem to grasp that, nor do they really grasp, you know, how impactful in a positive way sports can be, primarily football here, because football is the big money generator. But, I think there's some presidents that do, but I think there's a lot of university presidents in the Pac-12 that just don't.
Yeah, and I think the argument they would make is no matter how interested or invested we are, we're not going to be able to climb that mountain because of the school that we're at, the location that we're in, our inability to pay a big-time salary for a coach to come in, the ability to finance a staff of a bunch of guys making seven figures, which is what it takes in the SEC, offense coordinators, defensive coordinators, like that stuff adds up pretty
quickly.
We're
creeping there, though. Oregon's got that. Washington has that.
And again, I think it goes back to those programs are never going to have any trouble. Like, look at what Oregon, now it's not all based on the president, but look how different. I go back, you know, I was a student there like 12 years ago. It's been a long time now. When I go back, I'm blown away at how different the campus looks. Like, they have rebuilt every stadium, every field. They've revamped Autzen. They built new practices. I mean, it's just nonstop building. The new track and field stadium, the new Hayward Field that they remodeled. Like, it's incredible, man. Everything's changed. They're investing in it, but you're just not going to be able to do that everywhere else in the conference.
Yeah, so we'll see. Stuart Mandel says for the first time, he's actually not convinced Larry Scott is going to stay the commissioner past 2022. To Dirt's point, maybe in 2021, you get to those TV conversations and they decide you're not going to be our commissioner. Why would we have you negotiate that deal? Let's bring in somebody else. Here's a severance check that I'm sure he'd more than gladly take because of how much he makes a year, and find somebody new. All right, we got a lot to get to in the second hour. Brandon Huffman covers national recruiting. I want to ask him what the downside to the Pac-12 not playing and being the last conference to play. What has been the downside in recruiting, if any? So he'll hop on at 1:30. But we'll start the second hour with the Western Conference Finals. 2-1, do we have a series now? Or did the Lakers just not show up last night? We'll start hour two there. Dirt and Sprague back with more on radio.com and 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.